Today, we find ourselves at the intersection of neuroscience and creativity with my friend, Amy Pearson. Amy firmly believes that creativity cracks open the soul. Each and every one of us is God's favorite, and living artfully is living authentically. So, that's where we're headed today on the Unhurried Living podcast. Amy Pearson is a longtime friend from the spiritual formation community. We met many years ago and have only been together in person a handful of times, but she is the kind of person that you simply pick up where you left off last time. Intelligent, soulful, and with a twinkle in her eye, Amy believes in the importance of expressing our God-given creativity. With a degree in journalism and advertising, Amy has worked for many years in the spiritual formation arena, leading the efforts of the Spiritual Formation Alliance and completing her Certificate of Christian Spiritual Formation from the Renovare Institute. Amy also served as a digital content creator for a digital platform that champions organizations transforming lives. Most recently, Amy desired to collaborate with others, and Burning Heart Workshops was born out of her lifelong journey with faith, learning, and leadership. Amy lives with her husband and family in Colorado. Enjoy my conversation with Amy. So, Amy Pearson, welcome to the Unhurried Living podcast. It's so nice to have you here.
I love the chance to be with you. Thank you.
Yeah, Amy is another friend, and we can do a lot of damage together if we get on a roll about certain topics, right?
Yes, we can.
So it's wonderful to have you here. And I thought we would just dig right on in and just get a bit of your story. What brings you to this intersection of neuroscience and creativity?
Oh, goodness. This can be a really long story, but we're going to try to keep it in the fairway for everybody today. Okay. I had a really strong foundation, evangelical Christian upbringing, parents who were deeply involved in community and helping start a church. They weren't pastors, but very involved in a lot of great things. And the long and short of it is I ended up, after working in advertising for a while, I came into a ministry my dad started called the Spiritual Formation Alliance, just how I met you and Alan.
Yes.
And I helped to run that thing for about 10 years. And I was just following the lead of my dad and all of our wise board members, like Alan, and different champions out there to help thought leaders and pastors and leaders of all kinds just think about spiritual formation and conversations that were bubbling up to the surface. We would try to connect people around them, either in big conferences or small roundtables or whatever. That was such another fantastic level of what God was just building into me, because I didn't realize at the time some of the great minds that I was around. I knew they were probably bigger, deeper thinkers than I was, but I didn't realize how much of that I just absorbed into who I was. And yet all growing up, I was like coloring in my Bible before that was a thing. You know, I wanted the Psalms to be pretty, so I would decorate them as they reminded me. And then later I end up in this certificate program, and they ask us to, as C.S. Lewis called it, festoon a psalm. And festooning is just with words or with color or with descriptions, what the word looks like to you and what jumps out at you. And that kind of stuff was part of who I was since I was a really little kid. I didn't see that modeled around me. And so even though I was really very committed to Jesus and loved him a lot, I longed to see people that were like me in how they encountered Jesus, how they played, how they investigated and discovered. And and learn and got the word into them. And nobody was talking about that. And nothing I was doing was heretical. I was very intentional and present to God's word and interacting with him. And it was a very embodied thing. Like sometimes it was just, as one of my friends puts it, like twirling in front of the Father who loves to watch his child dance. And just had this sense of God's playfulness with me in these personal encounters. So I was really comfortable, especially for a Presbyterian, with this interaction with the still small voice of the Holy Spirit. I just anticipated it. But again, I did not see that. So after a while, as I describe it, I felt like I was sitting at the children's table and I just couldn't figure out where all the other kids were. Because I'm around all these grownups, you know, the big spiritual formation voices. But nobody was talking about this kind of stuff. And I felt, no one said it, but I felt like it was not as important, these ways of being. I entered that certificate program that I mentioned. And if you ask me why I was doing it, I thought I was doing it so that I could soak more deeply in the stuff that had been going on around me in all these meetings and in all these conversations. And I think in reality, I had this idea that at some point the clouds would part and I would see this thing that I was longing for come down from heaven, and his glorious rays would just announce the transformation that was in me. And I don't know, but, again, I just felt like this place where I found such joy with God was kind of fluffy, if that makes sense. So, I don't know. I have this picture too in my head of just walking around with a pinched nerve because my head bent so heavily to the left with all of this really good stuff, but it just was keeping me to myself. So, even though we talked about community and in these different groups, not just the certificate program, but other fellowships that I've been in, we talk about the need for community, but we didn't give any practical practices or ways of bringing that into this process of our spiritual formation and transformation. And then I went to this conference. It was honoring Jane and Dallas Willard. And it was put on by Jim Wilder and his organization, Life Model Works. We were friends with them and wanted to be there and support it. And a couple of my friends were doing breakouts at this little mini conference. And then the dinner was just a lovely honor to the couple. And I encountered these ideas of actually connecting relationally, exploring attachment to God and to other people, and how when those attachments are broken, we can only get so far. And then, as they put it, our relational circuits just stunt any growth that we would make. That was a huge turning point for me. And Dr. Wilder has been an incredibly dear mentor to me in the last several years, helped me really articulate where I was in the journey. And it's something that I think so many other people may find true, is that what I was missing was what to do when I hit what I call creative resistance. When I hit this point of feeling stuck and I can't articulate why, I'm frustrated or I'm afraid or I'm just kind of unable to move forward. It usually comes down to some of these issues of just not being present to ourselves mm-hmm. and to God for a number of different reasons. So, told you. can go on about this. But my hope is, like, if we can reframe this and get people to look at that, when they meet Jesus and encounter Jesus, they see him very differently, because if we go toward that relational side of our brain instead of toward that linear logical side of our brain, first, not that we don't need the logical linear, but that we realize our brain responds first to spirit and relationship, then we're releasing and reframing the way that we experience Jesus. These are, as Jesus loving people, we're going to encounter this incredibly rich, fun, joyful way of being ourselves and offering ourselves more fully to the world.
Yeah, no, that's good. Well, one of the things that stood out to me while you were talking, because we can see each other, is you tilted your head to the left. I'm like, what is she doing? But I get what you mean. Like, there's so much left brain. And, you know, you call yourself a maker in a thinker's world. You might have touched on that a bit just now, but what else can you say about that? What does that mean?
Well, just as I leaned my head to the left, I have these little images in my head every now and then of what I'm trying to say. And yeah, my head's leaning to the left. And I'm also looking down because I'm doing a lot of reading and I'm doing a lot of praying and I'm trying to get quiet. You know, it's a very, it's hard to look up, and yet God's face shines on us and longs to be gracious to us. And so we need to know that we need to see his face, the joy on his face, to experience that relationship with him. And man, what a conduit we can be to other people. If we can shine back that same, because we've received it, we can shine that out and fire each other up.
Yeah. No, I love that image of kind of a warm sun, top of a mountain, arms yes. back, like, oh.
Yes. Yes. I just, in fact, use that image that there's a great practice of just kind of journaling your places of gratitude or really vivid memories. And I have one standing on the top of Copper Mountain Ski Resort, which is my happy place, is skiing. And it was a beautiful sunny day and my arms were just out. And I'm just like, oh, Jesus, I feel you here. I had my worship music playing, was ready to go ski. It was such a good day. That's that feeling, because you're so aware of God's smile. And that is something that happens in this right side of our brain, this relational side of our brain that we are not taught to be aware of or attune with.
Yeah, well, I mean, nature is a natural place for this to happen, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the top of a mountain, a ski slope. For me, it would be the beach, of course. Yes. I mean, as much as you love skiing, I love just being at the beach in any form.
Oh, beach walk. Great.
So,
yes.
Yeah. Oh, you need to get out here so we can do that. I don't know when, but don't you love Southern California? You must
love Southern California. And I happen to love a daughter, son-in-law, and new grandchild. So yes.
That is right. Well, then we need to come back out soon. That's right. Amy's a new grandma. We forgot. That's like completely important.
Sounds weird, but yes, it's true.
So exciting. Well, moving back here to the intersection of neuroscience and creativity, how would you put all of that together? We've got neuroscience, we've got creativity, we've got maker and thinker, some of these phrases. How does this all connect?
Well, first, I think it's important for me to define what I mean by creativity.
Yeah.
I believe that creativity is just a part of it's a characteristic of God's spirit, just flat out. I also believe that creativity is anything that cracks us open in order to connect more fully to God and other people.
That is a really beautiful and kind of broad definition that I haven't really heard before.
Yeah, I think the biggest distinction that I would underscore is when people talk anymore about creativity and creative process, a lot of schools actually teach design thinking and oh gosh, I'm totally blanking what they call the creative veins. I mean, Stanford has a program, Harvard has a program, a lot of schools, a lot of business schools are offering it. But they're talking about a product, and they're talking about a very linear process. And this is anything but linear. I mean, relationships are not linear. The Spirit of God is not linear. So I'm defining this as a part, as a characteristic of God's Spirit, and therefore it's a characteristic of ours. It really screams relationship there, and gives us an opportunity to recognize how we can see that and position ourselves to, I don't want to say to build. I mean, it's God building in us so that God can build in us these beautiful facets of who he created us to be, and to draw that out of one another, to start looking at each other and appreciating their creativity as well, so that we can fan the flames of that. I mean, there's this big blank space in a lot of our lives with God when we think of creativity and how we're encountering him creatively, how he speaks very uniquely to us. Yeah. And if we are aware of it, it's rarely shared in community. And when I hear people sharing that, or I recognize them acting out of that, I love that. That's probably more than art. I love to paint. I love to write. I love all things creative, but probably more than anything, I love watching creativity flourish in other people.
Yeah. Yeah. Two phrases are coming to my mind from different mentors, one who I met and one who's a podcast or a book mentor, you know. But James Finley, I remember him saying one time, that especially if you have a hard time thinking of God as Father, because a lot of people do have sort of wounds that make that difficult. He said this phrase, he said, what if you just think about a creative life force? And I don't think he was actually trying to be like some offshoot of something.
Woo-woo.
I don't think he was actually, I think that's another beautiful way of talking about God, a creative life force. Mm-hmm. And I love the word creative was in there, because to me, that's just a wide open word. We get so small sometimes and so narrow. And if God is creative and creator, and if you look at any species on the planet, you know, birds, how many kinds of birds are there? How many kinds of butterflies or ants? You know, I'm just so creative. And then the other mentor of mine, he would always say this, you're never more creative than when you're with the creator. Mm-hmm. That seems very simple and basic, but so it was one of his mantras. And he was always trying to get us to just, God has something to say to you through you to your people. If you want to be more creative with how you're reaching the people in your life, in your ministry, God is creative. And that creativity can flow through. So those are a couple of phrases that have stuck with me about creativity.
Right.
So I'm wondering as well for you, where do you find echoes of these ideas in scripture then?
It's so funny. I was sort of jumping out of my chair as you were saying that, because one of the places that I see it is in, there's a couple, but just as you were speaking about creative life force, I think about in Genesis 1 when it talks about God hovering over the deep. And when I picture that, I mean, really, just picture that.
It's almost impossible, isn't it? What does that even mean to have God's presence hovering over something?
Yeah. So that is, it's in the beginning, and again, blank. This essential part of his character is hovering over everything created, and it hovers over you and me and just waits to speak into our identity. This image of the creative spirit being in us, and you know, he calls that forth, his light shining through the darkness, so that we can be attracted, we can be ignited in his plans and purposes and draw one another to that warmth is just a win for everyone. It is a means that nothing can hold a candle to. It's so magnetic to me to think about that. My favorite verse in terms of the stuff I'm working on right now, the makers in a thinker's world idea, is in John 1, where he says, I'll just read this to you so I don't mess it up. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. And this is where it gets really fun to me. Through him, all things were made. Without him, nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. So I hear that in the beginning was the Word. Through him, all things were made. Without him, nothing was made that has been made. We are makers. We are makers. We are makers. We are makers. And if that's hard for someone to embrace, then sit with it.
Yeah, because some people do not consider themselves creative or that they make anything. But we're not talking about embroidery or painting necessarily, although those are good. But I mean, aren't there many other ways to be a maker?
Yes, there are so many ways. And I mean, this is God talking to us about the light that shines in us over all mankind that can draw people, not to overshine God or to, you know, outdo him. It's to bring him glory. Mm. So that part of how you might be creative is so powerful because it's what lights you up. It's not something you have to drag out and you have to be, I don't want to say falsely humble, but you don't want to be embarrassed about it. I mean, again, creative resistance is a thing. And some people really struggle with the idea that, you know, it's bragging to say that you're creative. It's like saying you're really good at something. And I think they miss the point. Some of that comes out of fear too.
Yeah.
Because you've got some imaginary scale of comparison. Like, I'm not as creative as so-and-so.
Of course.
Are. And the only other thing I'd say about that creativity thing, because I hear it a lot, is if anybody is a fan of Brené Brown, back a while ago, I think it was like 14 years ago or something, she addressed creative wounds and learning wounds. And now I'm totally blanking the name of this book, but in her book, she talks about 85% of us experience learning wounds. And of that 85%, 50% of them are related to our creativity. So it's not surprising that we've shut down the belief that we might be creative. You know, it's even in a comment of, you know, say your great aunt says, "Boy, I always remember how good your sister was at math." Well, she's not saying you're bad at math. She's just sort of, there's an implication there where I might take on, I'm not as good at my sister at math. Or somebody laughing at a drawing you did in third grade, you know, it sticks with you. So you decide you're gonna do something else. When you play, it will not be drawing and showing other people. So these are really real considerations that I think the enemy of our souls loves it when he can get in there and convince us, nope, you're not creative. Because if you can't be creative, you can't really be a whole person. You can't come up with a great idea, have the confidence that you might investigate it, or even just to play fully. We can't fully play if we can't be creative. We can't discover things. We can't generate so much goodness and so much truth and beauty that we're intended to accomplish on our day, in our days here, for God's glory.
Yeah. Yeah. I find for myself that it seems that there always has to be a way in which I'm expressing myself. Mm-hmm. Right. It's like, I have to give something. Mm-hmm. And, so I posted on Instagram, this'll air in a couple of weeks. So this will be a couple of weeks old news, but I just finished the first draft of my second book. I turned it in. Yay. I hunkered down over the weekend and I just plowed. I wanted to make my way through one more time of the entire process, but kind of this last week, as I knew that it was going to wind down and I was going to be done with this particular moment of sharing something within me, which I think is another definition of creativity, right? There's something in me that I want to express.
Yeah.
I started watching YouTube videos of people doing, like, I was trying to think of handcrafts because I wanted to just have something in my hand that I could work on and make beautiful. So I'm like, oh, well, I could crochet or knit or embroidery or something, you know? And I'm like, oh my gosh, there's like, then you have to buy hoops and thread and I then have to learn. And I remembered that I had an old backpack full of coloring books and colored pencils from a few years ago. And I thought, you know what? I just need to, because my brain was exhausted from the work it was doing to produce the book. But I felt this need to continue to create. Mm-hmm. So I didn't like my old coloring books. So I got on Amazon real quick and I bought two $6 coloring books that had pictures that intrigued me. And so for the last few days, I've been sitting there in the evening with the light on and the little fire next to me. And I've just been coloring and it has felt so soothing, but I'm not, I was joking with Alan. I'm like, what am I going to do with these? It's like a piece of paper and I'm just coloring in and I'm learning to shade and shadow and watching YouTube so I can make, you know, but the point is, it's just for the sheer creativity of it. And it's an outlet of beauty that makes me feel good and it helps me relax. And so I guess I'm sharing this story just to say, a lot of people are probably wired like this, but we don't always give ourselves permission or time to think it through. Like, there is something within, I think I hear you saying, everyone, mm-hmm. that we want to express, that we want, that's beautiful, that's creative. What might that be? So maybe that's the question. What is that for you? Yeah. Right. And how would you give yourself the space and time to figure out what that is?
Yeah. And I think that it's two things came to mind when you were talking about the coloring, that, you know, how some people get their best ideas in the shower or.
Oh, totally. I'm one of those people. Yes. Always.
Or right before their eyes open, or for my husband, he used to love to be a runner. He doesn't run so much anymore because his back took too much of it, but he would be out running and get just great inspiration. We're setting the conditions to rest and be quiet and open when we allow ourselves to play. And to be curious and to investigate and to learn, even like you said, you're learning shading by coloring. There's something to it that has value. It doesn't have to result in a product.
Right.
It's helping you to rest in a place of peace. And one of the interesting little neuroscience factoids I learned from both Kurt Thompson and Jim Wilder is that, joy is a high energy state that our brains get into. Peace is the same place. It registers in the same place in our brain, but it's a quiet version of joy. And we must have both to hold and develop a capacity for joy. So we need those spaces that are sometimes just unwinding.
Yeah. And I think that's what I've been finding. So I finished one picture so far and it's really cute and I'll never frame it or put it anywhere. It'll just go in a file folder, but it will have felt good to just do it. And I trust what you say, that there is a place inside of me that is maybe, I don't know, enlarged or expressed.
So settled down so we can hear.
Yeah, it is a settling down process because you're focusing. I'm trying to stay in the lines. I'm trying to figure out highlights and shadows and making a flower. If you're just looking at one flower on a page, there's something soothing about that. So anyway, let's just talk about one more thing before. And then there's a free thing that Amy has created for you all that we're going to talk about in a minute, but I just want to ask one more question. I know that you care a lot about community as well. You know, this isn't just a me, myself, and I sort of thing. So how does engaging in community form us in all of this?
Well, that comes down again to this idea of joy. And joy, neurologically defined, is being delighted to be together. I'm delighted to be with you.
Oh, I'm delighted to be with you. Yes.
And when you consider what we've gone through with this pandemic, it seems obvious that it's essential for us as human beings to have that. We are not created as human beings to be alone. That spirit in us longs for that. When we're alone, things like anger and fear and narcissism, division just rise up. And you look at the headlines. the Trinity, Adam and Eve, the disciples, those were all examples of community and communing with God. Mm-hmm. And creative things came out of them.
Yeah.
Consider that alongside of, numbers vary on this, but upwards of 60% is kind of accepted as the number of people that struggle with attachment wounds. So if attachment wounds are how we are able to bond and connect based on what we learned from our caregivers early on, that's a huge hurdle in our joy. Like we need community to reconnect what's been broken in us in that regard, to be able to attach to God, to connect with Him. And if the great commandment to love the Lord with all our heart, soul, and mind is really in the Bible, we can't get around that. Yeah. We can't live in the fullness of our creative potential. More than that, our creative purpose. And that's what I call the creative great commission. Like we have this great creative commission that we are here in Jesus's name to heal with others in healthy, identity building, joy filled ways.
Yeah.
And spiritual formation research Barna's done, the Reveal study, more with Greg Hawkins, they all have gone on to just say, we cannot experience lasting spiritual transformation apart from relationship. And I would say we cannot have relationship if we don't bring the fullness of our creativity to it. So it's really important that we start helping to build practices into our way of being with God that build connection with ourselves and others. Things that are sacred get normalized, like a manual journaling, like using your photo cards that are so beautiful, by the way.
Ah, thank you. Inviso.
I love those.
Yeah.
Just to sit and dwell with them on a morning when you feel led to be asking God, how do you want to spend time with me today? Where am I in your presence, Lord? Where am I in my body? Just making that something that we talk about in our groups. We consider it first, yes, and that's a personal reflection, but we share about those. We share the picture that you doodled and drew and learned from and how it affected your spirit. We get all our senses involved when we tell a story or we share a memory. We see the importance of practicing the presence of God, like Brother Lawrence or Frank Laubach used to talk about. We embody breath as part of getting quiet. I mean, I'm like ping ponging all over here.
Yeah.
But these are ways that if they need to be validated as a very essential part of getting before God, quieting, reflecting, being in our bodies, and then looking for places, like Henry Blackaby said, looking for these creative places that God is saying, join me, and jump into it. And that might be in the middle of a business plan. It might be on a playground. It could be at an easel. But gosh, it's just any place where you can be curious and ingenuitive and listen and discern and discover and collaborate. Those are all creative things that we can share on a journey. And they happen first. Our brain invites us that direction first. And then it bounces back and forth between how we can build up with that knowledge we've acquired over time on whatever we're excellent at doing and however it reflects God. That stuff goes back and forth and back and forth and creates in our brain these neural pathways of habit and expression that are powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm thinking about people. I talk to a lot of people who say, I just don't have people who I can talk to at these levels. And, I think it's good to turn that into a question that becomes a prayer, which an example of a question would be, Lord, where would I find at least one person, maybe two, maybe a group, mm-hmm. where I can have this level of conversation, this level of being seen, this level of support? Where is that for me? Mm-hmm. And let that question be a prayer and just keep your eyes open. I have to think that there's a way for us to find people. I mean, these coaching groups I've been doing with women, I'm in doing one now. There's 9 ladies and they're from all over the place, all over the United States, and they don't know each other. But, you know, it's like they all found this thing. And now we just finished our second meeting, but within the first meeting, they were already knitting together because they came in ready to grow, ready to share their lives. And they did. Mm-hmm. And they went there rather quickly and they're bonding. And I know it's on Zoom. I get that. That's still a little bit of a whatever, the internet. But I'm thankful for that opportunity. We do still have the chance together gather from Canada and the United States, the East Coast. There's 9 of us in there. And there's a shared value. There's a shared heart. And they are seeing each other and holding each other. Mm-hmm. My hope is that anyone who's listening could find something similar.
Yeah.
Being held, being seen.
Yes. And there are, you as a good example, are the great spiritual directors out there that embrace creativity in really rich and wonderful ways. And I would challenge people listening to also go fishing for that in other people. Start looking and delighting in the creativity of other people, affirming it and reflecting back to them how you see God and what they are glowing with. Because that is the stuff that, you know, again, in John 1, it's yelling at us. You guys, you're the light of the world. Like, come on and shine.
Yeah. Because
that is like, it's like we're laying stones for a fire pit out in the wilderness and getting this fire going and inviting people around it. That is magnetic. Right now, what a lot of people see when they think of Christians, it's not that, because there's something we're either repressing or not identifying as part of the expression of Jesus in us.
Yeah.
So this is a great opportunity.
I love that verse because it's so much more, I feel like a lot of times, because it did sort of come in that heavy left brain, everything became kind of like a command or a rule or a to-do list, even though we're the people that proclaim grace. It's really a weird irony. We're proclaiming grace out of one side of our mouth, and then we actually turn all of these beautiful ideas into rules, and then we get encumbered. But the way you said it and the way I saw it on your face was, you're the light of the world. Shine. I mean, like, that's like us. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, there's something within me that I could let shine and really help. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, but it doesn't always come across as an invitation like that. And I think in part, at least what you're talking about is we have the opportunity to come out of that way, that heavy one-sided way, and expand. Yes. And you're talking about left brain, right brain. But I mean, can we expand the just the cognitive or knowledge or whatever you want to, you know, what about creativity? What about community? What about love? What about attunement and attachment, and how does that all happen? And then how can we shine out from that? How's that for a summary?
That's a fabulous summary. And start shining, girl.
Start shining. There it is. I listened to I love this. I wish I would have thought of this. There's a woman I listen to. She trains TED people who give TED talks. Like, she doesn't train them, but like, people go to her when they need to give an important speech and she helps them. And her tagline is this. Now tell me, this is perfect for me because my name is Jem. She signs off. She always says, shine on, you crazy diamonds. And I just wish, like, anything that could be my tagline, but I can't have it because she uses it. But isn't it perfect? Shine on, you crazy diamonds.
I want to make a plaque of that for your office.
I wish.
Right behind you.
If I had a tagline for my life, that's probably the phrase I would use. And I don't know how to come up. So if anybody out there listening comes up with something as cool as that, let me know.
Oh, gosh.
So, well, maybe briefly here. I know. So I teased that Amy does. She has, there's a graphic. And I think there's going to be some questions that go with it that can help you make your way through some of the stuff we're talking about. She's just going to describe it briefly so that you know what it is when you download it.
Yeah. So I've been obviously given this a lot of thought, a lot of reflection, and really the diagram is the angle of how I can integrate creativity into the process and practice of my own spiritual transformation. So if you look at the diagram you're going to download, there's a picture of the brain. And again, we're talking in those old terms of left brain and right brain. It's laid out there. When we come into a relationship with Jesus, I would say the majority of us are instantly encouraged into left brain activity. We make a hard left. We start learning scripture, we get into Bible studies, we go to church and listen to sermons, and then we figure out what we're going to do with it. We explore it, we discover it, we problem solve with it in our own lives, we act on it, we share it. That's very left brain. Those are functions of making. If we go straight to making, which we didn't even get into this, but that part of our brain cycles at 5 cycles a second. It's slower than our right brain. Our right brain are more relational, the spaghetti kind of brain, as they say, that thinks in all these divergent ways. It's very relational. It runs at 6 cycles a second. So for instance, what that means is when I walk in a room, I'm unconsciously going to pick up a vibe. Is it a happy place? Is something wrong? I can tell by people's body language, you know, how 80% of communication is body language, all those things. My body, my brain takes all that in. If we are encouraging people to immediately go to the left side of our brain, we're shutting down what works faster. We're shutting down the ways that we relate and react. We're shutting down all the input of awareness and assessing who we are, where we are, if we're safe, and inviting God's presence into whatever those relationships are. So this diagram of integration lays out that we, or actually suggests that we might take more time as part of our spiritual practice to consider how we can connect to God, get quiet enough to do that, to assess where we are in our bodies, and overall, just become more aware at what is operating just below the surface. Did we come into our day waking up with joy and bounding out of bed? If we didn't, why not? How are we feeling? Maybe we caught a bug. I don't know. But to be aware of those things can really give us an opportunity to make adjustments or to just enjoy being connected with ourselves and then overcome the hurdle of any resistance we might feel in our day, moving into attuning. That all of that builds us toward an identity, toward being authentic, toward being our true selves. When we can do that, then we can bound over that bridge in the corpus callosum in our brains and add in the logic and then just keep ping-ponging back and forth to build these creative habits and ways of doing things with such excellence and such demonstrating such a value of relationship and such an authentic expression of our creative selves in what we do in the mundane and in our great creative commission and what we spend our lives doing. Yeah.
Well, that's going to be great. I encourage you to download that. I'll give instructions for that a bit later. But yes. Thank you, Amy, for creating that for us, giving us a way forward here that's practical. Yeah. And I'm sure approachable and doable because I know you.
The questions and all that will make it make a lot more sense. Yeah. Some real practical ways when you have a look.
Oh, good. Good, good, good. Well, how can we, you know, follow you, find you online? Where are you?
Well, there's a website, burningheartworkshops.com. I am on Facebook and Instagram, but admittedly have been less active in the last year because our events were very much about retreats and team building and workshops. So that's a little slow, but you can at least check out to see what's being offered, where we do private stuff too on request. Yeah. And I'm working on a book that is pretty exciting. And the working title is Makers in a Thinker's World. So hopefully there will be more to say about that by later this year.
Yes. Yes. Cause you're going to finish that book and get it published. That's
yes, I am.
Yes, I am. Oh, well, it's been such a pleasure to be with you, Amy. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's always fun to talk to you, Jim. Thanks.
Amy has created and provided a creative integration diagram and worksheet that you can use to make your way forward in this area. It makes a beautiful overlay for the Emmanuel journaling process we spoke about in episode number 140 with Sungshim Lopnow. And if you want to hear more about attachment, you can listen to podcast number 136 with Summer Joy Gross and number 129 with Dr. Jim Wilder. You can gain access to Amy's bonus resource on our website at unhurriedliving.com/podcast-bonus. And as always, we love connecting with more and more friends like you who want to rest deeper, live fuller, and lead better.